Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Tom Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast, joined as always by Phil A. Perry. We got a banger of a week ahead of us. There's so much to plow through, not just with what took place at the top of the American Football Conference where the Patriots have edged closer to the number one overall seed, but the Buffalo Bills. But we got a couple days because the Bills are on a Monday. We're going to be able to circle back and talk more about the Bills later. Phil, I want to talk about the MacLash that's going on. The assailing of Mac Jones, Wonder Boy, by the pack of Little League dads who are screaming at their kid as they drive away from the field for overthrowing the cutoff man in a 12-2 victory. What is wrong with you people, whether it's you or Gasper or Bedard or Pro Football Focus or Felger and Maz, you know, is to be expected. But what the hell?
Listen. Let me put it this way to you right off the top.
Okay.
Because I think we are closer on this than you believe. Right off the top, Tom, do you believe Mac Jones is a good quarterback?
Sure. We're at a moment here. I'm going to read you my slant. We're at a moment in which a quarterback built like a bottle can complete 70% of his passes, throw for 312 yards and no picks, lead a 23-point win, and wind up getting raked on a Monday. He's a bottle-shaped rookie, Phil.
Man, bottle-shaped. He's getting – the raking is harder now than it was on Monday. Calling the guy a bottle on multiple occasions here. And I gave him a B-minus. It's a fine grade. It's fine. He's not getting raked. He's going to be fine. He's a big boy. Okay? He graduated from Alabama early.
Yep.
Smart. He's mature. He's competitive.
Mm.
And when we have as much information on him as we do right now, 12 games of information, how many of these games that the Patriots have lost? They've lost four games.
Right.
How many would you say have been on Mac Jones? To me, zero. It's
yeah,
that Goose. Many.
Goose.
He's been excellent.
So they should be 12-0 with him. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is if someone has shown you that they are good at something, it's okay to expect them to continue to be good. And it's also okay when they mess up and they don't perform up to the standards that they have now established for themselves, we can point that out.
Okay. I think maybe less to you and more, and there's so many varied takes, and that's why this job is so much fun. We all look at the same canvas and then come away with different critiques. Steve Palazzolo, our great friend from Pro Football Focus, never going to assail the work they do because it gives us a starting point for evaluations that are hard and concrete and hard. Evan Lazar from CLNS Media. I like to call him Smash Concept Lazar. He's deep in the scouting talk. And he noted that Pro Football Focus had given Mac Jones his lowest rating of the year. And Steve Palazzolo, as I said, our good friend, we always have to say that when we're going to critique, echoed Evan Lazar's tweet by saying, Mac lucky on some of his biggest throws. Byard overrunning a PBU opportunity. That would be the Jacoby Myers deep throw. Bourne winning at the catch point on a TD when that is normally broken up. Bourne with a yak-driven TD. And the dropped INT was as bad as it gets. And then I would say, actually, you know what's worse than a dropped INT? An actual INT. And the point I'm trying to make is we're grading, or at least Steve is, and Pro Football Focus is, and Greg Bedard from Boston Sports Journal echoed and said, yep, lowest grade of the year. This was the worst he's played. The worst he's played? His lowest grade? He threw three picks against New Orleans in 51 attempts. I mean, that was worse. And I know one of those was a Jonnu Smith one. Phil, you were living that up in the chamber. I know you were.
It was. And the one at the end of the game was basically a Hail Mary when they were way down and he was forcing it into a spot. So I don't.
The Chargers game too.
I don't blame.
I just want to mention Chargers game too.
I don't blame people for saying the Saints wasn't as bad as the box score indicated. And I don't blame people for saying that this past weekend's game was not as good as the box score would indicate. I agree with Steve on a couple of those points, Tom. And I would say this. Okay,
the Bourne touchdown throw.
Can I just ask you, how many good throws did he make? How many good throws? Good, like you look at them and they're objectively good. He made some throws that he should make, right? That an NFL caliber quarterback should make.
I think the Bourne throw.
He already established the fact that he can be really, really accurate. And he didn't necessarily reach that. Go ahead.
First
Bourne throw is good.
But he gets 0 points for that because on Pro Football Focus's measure, that's a ball that should have been broken up by Byard because his hand was in the pocket, as they call it. And it wasn't. So Byard failed. The Myers throw, he gets dinged because Byard overran it. Well, then are we dinging the Hunter Henry touchdown throw down the seam because it was a narrow window? I mean, at some point, and I tweeted this during the game, when he's continually making narrow window throws of great anticipation that are just eluding fingertips, et cetera, over and over and over again, that's a level of play that's been established too. So we shouldn't always be explaining away or frequently explaining away that level of play. So I'm arguing something else with you now that you're actually arguing with me about, which is saying that he deserves the criticism. But I'm saying he deserves to have some of these throws, like the Bourne throw. That's not just him getting lucky. That's a stupidly anticipatory throw, almost within a third of a second from taking the snap. Go ahead, Phil.
I would disagree a little bit. I think the reason it was probably almost broken up in the first place is maybe that it wasn't anticipatory enough. You know, and I think that's maybe the look fade? That they give. The deep ball to Jacoby Myers.
No, I'm sorry. I'm talking the fade.
This is the Kendrick Bourne touchdown you're talking about.
Yeah, that's
great throw. So we're great throw. And
of that.
Listen, okay, and I don't Jacoby think it Myers. Was his. I don't think it was his worst game. You know, I would look at. You know, I know you referenced the Chargers game. I would look at that one and say, you know, that one. Maybe even the Panthers game. I thought that was a little bit of a lull, right? He hit a little bit of a valley there, in terms of his game to game performance. I do think it's okay to criticize throws that end up with good results, though. Like Peyton Manning, for instance, on his ESPN Plus show, he looks at the Kendrick Bourne touchdown down the seam against the Browns. Deep ball, very tight window, right to the goal line, touchdown, huge play.
Mm-hmm.
He looks at that throw and says, could have done a little bit better job with his eyes here.
Mm-hmm.
He brought the safety to the throw, and it could have been broken up. The guy could have been decapitated. Could have a number of different things could have gone wrong on that play, and it didn't. And so good for him, and they get 6 points. But it's okay to look at these little moments, and we're not saying he's a bad player.
I know.
It's not the dad yelling at the 12-year-old saying you're gonna be a failure the rest of your life because you didn't look off a safety. But it's okay too to say that there are times when he could be better. It's not interesting to look at a rookie quarterback and say they keep winning games like. You know, and everything is great. Everything is great.
Right.
And he's doing amazing. I just think it's okay to also be critical while we
are at
the
okay.
same time heaping praise upon him.
But I think that we also have a tendency to pin the needle the other way in terms of, well, it's incumbent on us.
Who's we?
You probably are accepted a little bit, but Chris Gasper wrote a column in the Globe today. What are you giggling about?
No, I'm just, are we overly negative?
You and me?
Yeah.
No, me, never. I'm right on with everything I say, do, and write.
What did Gasper say?
Let me find it, because we're going to be talking about it on Early Edition tonight. But and I canceled my Globe subscription recently because I'm hemorrhaging to all my different subscriptions. So I probably have to renew it now that Gasper's back there. I was missing out on all that Volman stuff. All right. So Gasper says the quintessential question is exactly how good a quarterback does Belichick need to be successful in the manner we're accustomed to during his Patriots reign. This isn't about what the kid can be. It's about what Belichick can do without the benefit of an elite quarterback. Mac mania runs wild. His completion percentage has become the new Rajon Rondo's assists of Boston sports, an oft-cited stat used to exaggerate the standing of a local player. Okay. What do we do? Also, Trenny, you know, had mentioned that, Gasper also right. Here's the rub for Patriots true believers. The more you hail the rookie as Baby Brady or TB12 2.0, the more you detract from the hoodie and his brilliance. We already know that Belichick can cop rings when armed with one of the league's best quarterbacks, Jan. The true test is whether he can do it without one. He's on track. Okay. The actual rub is this. Brady has two versions. He's got a 1.0 version from 2000 to 2009. And that's the version that Mac Jones is chasing. Brady was a malleable, valuable piece of clay, and Weiss, McDaniels, Belichick molded him into a winner in the first decade of his career, and they gave him everything he needed around him, special teams, defense, structure, discipline. Maybe he didn't have high-end targets, but that's okay. And that's what Mac's chasing, okay? And at this checkpoint, 12 games into his career, he's looking eye-to-eye with what Brady accomplished. 12 games in, I'm not saying all the way through, and he's never going to do what Brady 2.0 did. Brady 2.0 is 2010 to 2019. That's just absurd. So that's not going to happen. But I remember this happening too in 2001 after a few games. The Globe United stood tall in defense of Drew and just started saying Brady was a product of the system. He wasn't all he was cracked up to be. And I think that's what we're experiencing now in this Maclash, this much celebrated Maclash. It's a tsunami of Mac love. And we have people who believe they are bravely paddling against that tsunami and into the safe harbor of, well, I know what good football is. And this is what, come on. No one is over-loving, except for Jerry Thornton, the Patriots and Fitzy, and Mac Jones. Okay? What he's done, despite the missing Hunter Henry, to fixate and to sit there with a cry on under Felger and Maz yesterday, was Mac Jones really that good on Sunday? Who cares? They won 23 over the number one seed. Phil?
We can't do a podcast if nobody cares, though, Tom, unfortunately for us. So that's kind of the stuff that we talk about. And I think it's okay.
Oh, we're going to that's what they do. That's a Gary Tang way. That's what we do.
Well, is it not?
It is what we do, but I think we have to bring a measure of self.
We are bringing a measure. We are, Tom. We can discuss it. You should stop being on the internet so often and get off the radio, too, while you're at it.
Oh, get your face out of the grids and the stats. Listen to you.
We talk about this stuff all the time, and we can have a nuanced discussion without referencing the Globe and the radio and this, and these people are mean to Mac and those people are mean to Mac. What do we think? That's what I care about. What do we think?
I'm telling you what we think.
I think he had a B-minus kind of game.
Nobody, yeah, that's fine.
It's fine. It's what that's he was. Fine,
and that's fair, but I think when we start, I'm not on the internet. I'm looking at Pro Football Focus. That is your Bible. That you would inject that in your veins every week. That and Warren Sharp. I mean, what are you talking about?
It's not the grades. The grades for them are objective, and they put a lot of work into those, and that's great.
I agree.
What Pro Football Focus to me is most valuable for. And listen, the grades would suggest that they do a pretty damn good job when you look at who is the best graded players.
I'm not saying they don't do a good job. Positions.
No, so I'm just putting that out there. Like, it's a pretty good marker of how good a player is if you look at it over a long stretch of time, over multiple years. But the great value to me is for them to watch the film as closely as they do. Like, I think that's another misconception. People think the grades are based on numbers. The grades are a number that is based on film review by people who have played, I think, especially a quarterback. I think they're, I don't want to get this incorrect, but I believe it's Bruce Gradkowski is the one who signs off on, you know, longtime NFL quarterback who signs off on all the grades. Anyway, after watching this film.
Yeah, and they still anticipated results, et cetera. But there's humans on the other end.
Right. I would just say, like, it's okay. Let's take it all in. Let's take it all in. Let's react to all of it and be able to do a little bit of both.
Let me give you
which is what he's doing for himself, which is what Josh McDaniels is doing for him. I asked Josh McDaniels how he felt Mac Jones had played on Sunday, because this is such a talking point now. People are getting so
criticized me
on both sides. I'm saying, you and I care about. I also care about the people who are coaching Mac Jones. I care about Mac Jones, and I care about everybody that's doing work on it. It's all interesting.
Pro Football Focus.
I don't mean to say I don't care. The grades don't get me as riled up as some people. That's all I'm saying.
I think
they provide a lot of good context. Otherwise, Josh McDaniels said
they become,
he had,
however,
some throws that he would like back. Do we want to listen to the Josh sound, or do we care?
Yes, let's run that. Good call.
The other day was very similar to a lot of other games this year, where there's a lot to be happy with, and then there's definitely things to coach and correct. You know, I think he touched on a few things. I think after the game that he felt like he had an opportunity to maybe capitalize on and didn't. And I think that's probably pretty commonplace right now. You know, I'm still waiting for the perfect game. Haven't had that yet. So that's very, it's just difficult to go through an entire NFL game and, you know, not, you know, have some things that you either make mistakes on or learn from. I think the big thing for us is we are seeing growth in his ability to process the opponent every week, his ability to change from one week to the next in terms of the mindset of handling the, let's just say, the problem players or the problem schemes that come up. But that's an ongoing process. You know, I mean, Buffalo's defense is quite a bit different than Tennessee's. Tennessee's was similar to Atlanta in some ways, but, you know, there was definitely some other things that were different. So this week's going to be another big challenge there. And I think for Mac, when he comes out of the game, having generally taken care of the ball and made some good decisions, even if they resulted in an incomplete pass or a possession that ended in a punt or a field goal. That's not, you know, that to me, I don't look at all those and say, wow, what a disaster that was. You know, sometimes you have to understand what could have been in terms of worse scenarios to appreciate kind of how a possession ended the right way. I give you an example of that. We had the one sack in the fringe in the fourth quarter, you know, on the, I don't think it was like second and 10 or second line, and it was third and 20 something. And then, you know, we need a handful of yards to get back into field goal range. And he makes a decent decision, completes the ball underneath to Jacoby. We get it into field goal range. Nick capitalizes on it, makes the kick. Ultimately, the possession was, you know, wasn't exactly what we wanted, but there was some positive there because he's understanding the scenario that he's in. And he helped us actually win the situation, if you will, you know, because third and 20 somethings are hard to overcome. So, you know, like most of the games this year, good and bad. The bad's not too bad. And that's what we want to try to minimize. And we just try to use those opportunities to learn and grow and get better. And he's got a great attitude and approach about that.
So Josh McDaniels there says that Mac had some throws he would have liked to have back, but he also provides some important context, which is there are really good plays and really good decisions that get made in a game like that. They don't have to be 40-yard dimes down the field that still help us out, that still put points on the board. He referenced the third and forever short throw to Jacoby Myers just to get them right back into field goal range after taking a sack. He likes that moment. He likes that decision. He likes how Mac Jones handled that situation. And to me, that's why it's not a D. It's not his worst grade of the year. It's he made the throws we expected him to make the majority of the time. That gets you B minus. The Browns game is an A. The Browns game, if you're putting it in people's hands from 35 yards out on the regular, we can ratchet up the grade from there. The reason I say I don't care about what anybody else thinks is because it does feel like, Tom, that the opinions are so all over the map and everybody's is a little bit nuanced. You know, if we just want to hammer Pro Football Focus, then that's fine. But to me, it's easier, it's simpler to narrow our focus and talk about what we think, what the coaches think, what maybe Mac Jones thinks.
I agree. But also we talk sometimes about the conversation around the football team, which guides the, and I hate this word, narrative.
It's noisy though, right? Like
it is very noisy. So I want to cut through the noise. Like, so if I hear a lot on a Monday, I want to grab my megaphone and say, hey, yes, he missed Hunter Henry.
And it was more than just that play.
Okay. Yeah, and he goes through these spates, and this is an aside. He does go through these spates in these in games where he just gets weird for stretches. He did it against, who the hell did he do it against? Carolina? Where Josh was yelling at him on the sidelines? He goes through these little spurts where he's just ineffective, makes some weird decisions. And he had one on two different drives on Sunday. But I think the megaphone I'm using is, when you have a Pro Football Focus number, which is less to criticize them, because I do think they're being objective, although I take some issue with not crediting for throws, which are tight window throws that he's able to make. They're not graded the same way. But I mean, that then becomes a cudgel for other people in our media, prominent ones, Bedard, Gasper, Felger, whoever, to say, okay, is this your king? Is this your king with his 53.8 Pro Football Focus number? You guys love your numbers. Well, look at this, 53.8, worst of the year. So maybe you want to settle it down and tap the brakes on Mac Jones, okay? So that to me is when we get into – and my counter to that is, okay, so we missed Hunter Henry and he had his weekly spurt of ineffectiveness. In the end, the inference shouldn't be, he's coming back to earth in a hurry. I'm the one who was talking a few weeks ago about a Mac toe where he leveled off. That happens. But I think we also don't have to infer that he's going to suck. Now, he might suck
and next Monday. If anybody said that he sucks.
Or that he's on the cusp of beginning to suck. I guess there is, to advance the conversation, to make sure the conversation keeps going, to keep the grist moving through the mill, you have to infer that, uh-oh, does the Mac have no clothes? Is he about to get undressed next Monday against the Bills? Even if he does, Phil, that's not leaving him somehow and everybody who thought he was a good player in the wrong. Is it?
No shot. He should be rookie of the year.
If he goes 13 for 28. Go ahead. If he goes 13 for 28, two picks and takes four sacks next week and looks like an absolute goof and they lose 29-7, it doesn't mean Mac Jones was an apparition, does it?
No, it doesn't. But here's why I think it's okay to criticize in good moments, right? When the stat line's great, they come away with a big win at home and it ends up being a blowout. Even against the Browns, if there were moments worth criticizing him for there, the reason those are always valid, I'm sure you feel the same way, is that it is worth noting those things when they happen because they could happen later. So against the Falcons, right? They win, ends up being another, I think, 80% completion day for Mac Jones. And after the game, I said, man, to me, it just didn't look like he was all that comfortable against some of these defensive back blitzes that Dean Pease sent. And oh, what do you know? The Titans send at least three more and probably more if I were to go back and look. And they all pretty much had an impact, a negative impact on the Patriots. Okay, well, now we've got a little bit of a trend developing. And now there might be something that, and Josh McDaniels basically took the responsibility for this. I found this interesting. He almost took the responsibility entirely off Mac Jones when it came to some of those blitzes, saying, we've got our rules. Some of those guys just have to get picked up, period, point blank, meaning on the offensive line or the back or the tight end or whoever's involved in the play. And he said a lot of times, this is almost verbatim, a lot of times.
Run this.
Everyone kind of looks at it and says, well, Mac didn't see this or Mac didn't do that. Most of the time it has nothing to do with Mac. And so, you know, he sets the protections and we got to follow our rules. You know, if our rules don't accommodate handling the blitz, then we need an adjustment. We had one or two of those come up the other day and he handled them fine. And then there was a couple other ones where we just didn't react quick enough in the protection part of it to handle our responsibility. And that's an ongoing evolution, you know, with, you know, different guys. You know, we got Brandon's our sub back now most of the time on third down, you know, and he's done a really good job there. But seeing the blitzes together and now the offensive line kind of, you know, getting back into sync with one another, and then the communication that needs to take place once the ball is snapped is not insignificant. You know, like there's a lot of communication pre-snap, but then all of a sudden the pieces start to change once the ball is snapped. And then there's more communication that needs to take place and happen in order to handle some of the exotic pressures that you get. So again, we either win or we learn. And on some of those plays, we didn't win, and we certainly have a lot to learn from them. And hopefully we'll do that this week.
So anyway, when you have little moments like that, when there are little blips on the radar, it could end up impacting an important game, whether it's the Bills or whether it's in the postseason. And now this team is going to be in the postseason, right? The expectations for this team have changed. Yep. I think the expectations for the quarterback then have to be elevated too, because it becomes not a question of, can he be a competent starter for a winning football team? It is, boy, can he help this team actually make a run? And if there's anything in there that might derail them as they make this run, it's worth pointing out now so that when it happens, we don't all just get blown away and say, man, I thought this was the best rookie quarterback of all time. How did he?
Right.
It turns out he just can't handle a safety blitz. Is that what it is? So he is a good quarterback. He's not a perfect quarterback. And that's all we're doing here.
Yeah, and mining
a good job of it.
Mining for the Achilles heel that might subvert their season is absolutely fair. Will Mac's average arm strength in the wind be a problem at Buffalo? That's 100% fair. But I just think that when we get into projecting what Mac will be relative to a Brady, or how does his success reflect on whether or not Bill Belichick is actually smart or just keeps getting, I mean, all of that, to me, he's the greatest coach of all time. He's got another malleable quarterback whose accuracy and acumen are unparalleled, and he's having great success with it, and the kid's talented. So yeah, it's good to look at the Achilles heel, and it's good to look at 270 yards rushing allowed the other day and say, is that real or is that just a byproduct? It's good to look at a Hunter Henry miss and say, is that indicative of what's going on down the road? But to look at it and say, you know, and I really feel this inference was there, not from Pro Football Focus, but from people using it and saying, you know, we all have to jump on the bandwagon of he wasn't that good. He wasn't that good. He wasn't that good.
Can I ask you something about just something you said a little bit earlier about Tom Brady? And you might have said it comparing Mac Jones, the rookie, to Tom Brady, the rookie, who obviously didn't play.
Right.
Is Mac Jones having a better rookie season through 12 games than Tom Brady had a second season through 12 games?
Yep.
You would say so?
Yeah.
The numbers are actually pretty interesting. I was just looking at Brady's. It looked like he was 16 touchdowns, 10 picks through 12 games.
And he finished, I think, 18-12 or 20-12.
That's pretty good.
He played 14.
Better than I remember through 12 games for him to have 16 touchdowns. Mac Jones is 16-8 right now.
Yeah.
So just based on that alone, you could point to Mac, but I didn't know.
Completion percentage is higher. The thing is, Brady had an offensive weapon that Mac really doesn't have in Troy Brown. There's no Troy Brown right now for Mac. Jacoby Myers isn't Troy Brown, nor is Kendrick Bourne. But other than Troy Brown, you got better tight ends on this team. You have a more potent running game. I would say you probably had a better third down back in Kevin Faulk, but he still hadn't turned into Kevin Faulk yet. Brady had less around him than offensively than Mac does right now. And there wasn't a culture, but it's a great conversation, and it's interesting too, because, you know, I looked at it the other day in terms of completion percentage and yards, Mac's way ahead of him, but it's a different NFL 20 years later.
Right.
Totally. Yeah.
Brady's Cleveland Browns game for Mac Jones. Mac Jones's Cleveland Brown game, Browns game for Brady. Looks like it was that week five game against the Chargers.
Week five. Oh, yeah. He went off. That was
64 and two touchdowns.
Yeah. It was a great game. That came out
54 times.
Yeah. And then you find the Falcons game.
Atlanta. Yeah. Yeah. That's another good one. 124 quarterback rating, 250 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, 21 for 31.
You know what's wild is find the Denver game where he had four picks. And if you look at the box score, he was eating them alive and then came undone at the end. And that was in Denver when they never won in Denver.
Boy, four picks and they lose 31 to 20. I mean, that's still the game. And maybe it's this week and maybe this launches us into the game. If you want to talk a little bit about that before we get to Castle later in the week. Mac Jones just hasn't had that game yet. Is this where he has that rookie mistake laden game at Buffalo because of the atmosphere, the elements, the crowd, the situation? Is he going to get eaten up by this?
That to me is what's so fascinating is this team has gone through a dozen games and not played in front of a hostile crowd. Nothing in Carolina, nothing in Atlanta, nothing in Los Angeles. Obviously nothing's going to happen to you at the Jets. All those games that were contested against good teams that would draw fans, Tampa, Dallas, those games were here. So not only is he going to go see a hostile crowd, he's going to see that hostile crowd on a Monday night in prime time. And it's a hostile crowd who I think I might've said this yesterday. We were told that the Patriots were dead. I got it right here. I have a receipt. It said Patriots dead, and now they're back. Explain this to me. So they are going to want Mac Jones' head on a platter the same way they wanted Tom Brady's on a platter for 20 years. And it's just, it's got to be, we have to get somebody on, whether it's Tim Graham or Sal Majorana, Sal, I butchered his last name, from Buffalo, just because Sal hates the Patriots more than anybody for what they've done to his sports writing arc. Not personally, but just the teams he got to cover were just C-blocked by the Patriots. So this is the first time they're seeing a hostile atmosphere. This is the first time, Phil, that Mac Jones, who was not the greatest projector of voice, is going to be in a loud atmosphere. That could be a factor, yay, nay.
It could be. This is almost like the cold weather thing.
Mm-hmm.
Until he sees it, how do we know how he's going to handle it? Can't, right? I mean, they work with a lot of noise at training camp. You know, they'll be blaring AC/DC over the public address system, over the practice fields. It's a little different when you're in Buffalo in December and people have been drinking all day so that they're not bothered by the cold that night. You know, it's just, I don't think even he knows how he's going to handle it until he gets into that spot.
Well, I think we have to highlight the Buffalo Bills as this week goes along. We've obviously highlighted Mac. We went over the Tennessee game. Coming up now, we have Kyle Van Noy. He's having another outstanding season. He's going to join us to wrap things up. We'll see you later in the week. Phil, what do you got? What do you got? You got some big NextPats stuff this week, right?
We do. We've got head on over to NextPats, and we should have very soon, if not already, conversation with Dan Orlovsky about Mac Jones. We'll get into some of the things that have impressed him that maybe he still needs to work on, how to deal with the cold as a young quarterback, all that stuff. We're also going to talk to Daniel Jeremiah later in the week. So that should drop right before your weekend, take you into that Monday night game.
See you guys later in the week. Here's Van Noy.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild.
conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's now time to bring in our good friend Kyle Van Noy from the home studio. How are you, my friend?
What's going on? Thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm ready to go. Co-host is ready to go.
Kendrick Bourne, let's just segue with that. You guys got a lot of happy guys on the team this year. You're a happy guy. Judon's a happy guy. Bourne's a happy guy. What's the general demeanor been like on a week-to-week basis for you guys?
Energetic, I would say. And that is what we want, especially during these times where you're getting later in the season, where, you know, you're getting to the grind season, the deep into the week 15s, mm-hmm. the 16s, 17s. We're not there yet, but that energetic from everybody in the building is nice to have, especially a guy like KB, who is just off the charts, happy-go-lucky every day. Doesn't matter if he has a bad day, a good day, you'll never know because he's always happy. Love that. Love KB. And he's balling. He's doing really, really good.
He sure is. It's infectious, too. I got a question for you. When you guys were 2-4, we talked a lot about moral victories and how close you guys were and the things you had to do. Now that you guys have won 6 straight, is there any kind of a feeling of vindication? Like, hey, we told you guys we were pretty good. We've done something here that you guys didn't think we were capable of. You feel that way at all?
I've honestly haven't even thought about that, but you know, I would say it does feel good. Obviously, it feels good to win. But nobody ever wants to be 2-4. And we know what it's like to be like that. And we're not trying to go back into that situation. So we're just trying to be the best we can be and control what we can control. And that's our effort, our play, our execution, our communication, and just trying to put all those tools together each and every week. We got a tough challenge ahead with Buffalo. They're playing really, really good football. You know, they were in the AFC Championship. They were the AFC East team to beat last year. They won it all for the AFC East with the hat and t-shirts, and we got to play up to their level. I mean, they're playing really, really good football. Josh Allen's really good. Sean McDermott is mm-hmm. an unbelievable coach. They're just doing a really, really good job.
You mentioned Josh Allen. He is a handful. Here's what Jerod Mayo had to say about Josh Allen and dealing with him at the linebacker level. Here it is.
Anytime you have a big, fast, strong guy that can run and also has a cannon for an arm, he definitely poses a threat, you know, to the defense. I would say, I wish I could sit here and say, you know, this one person can stop him, but honestly, I haven't seen anyone do it yet. It's going to take all 11 guys on the field as well as a good game plan to keep this guy contained in the pocket and see what happens.
Made Kyle plenty of games against Josh Allen in his 3 years in the league. What impresses you about how he plays? Is he comparable to anybody?
No, he's nothing like anybody in the NFL. He's one of one. He's really impressive. The way he is able to, one, lead his team. I think that is what is not talked about enough. Since he's been there, he's been the leader. You can tell everybody loves playing with him. They play passionate. They protect him. He's the key to this thing, and he does a really good job of throwing the ball, running the ball, directing traffic, getting them in the right play. Him and Daboll scheme it up really well. He's playing really good football.
Takes a couple guys, too, when you get to him, I would imagine, kind of like a Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, it's not just, okay, we're going to knock him down.
Like a shout-out because I had a bad play against him last year?
Oh, no, you were in Miami.
I would say Buffalo fans, they love bringing that one up when last year. I'm cool about it because I've gotten him back plenty of times, but you know, he did fumble on that play, but he got me.
Well, you're going to see Buffalo fans in a few nights, and really it's wild. But this, to me, Kyle, is the first truly hostile environment you guys are going to go into. It's not like Atlanta or L.A. or the Jets or where else were you? Well, you get it when I'm driving at Carolina, we're really hostile environments. This is going to be loaded to the gills, ready to scream on a Monday night in prime time, well-lubricated Bills fans.
Yeah. I mean, you've heard them from the time that they lost the AFC Championship. They believe they're a Super Bowl contending team. They are. They were number one last year, like I said, in the AFC East. They're the team to beat. They're the ones that everybody's been chasing to beat right now. And what a great matchup to go up there and play them. Their fans are amazing. For them not to play against, right? But they do a really good job of getting that stadium rocking. The Bills Mafia, they're, you know, I respect them. They're very passionate about their team. And it's good for sports. You know, I appreciate it as someone who, you know, looks back at the whole big picture. They do a really good job, and kudos to them.
It is. It's great for sports. It's going to be, you know, a spectacle. Sometimes you look at games like the Atlanta game. It's a primetime game. It could have been played in a library. This is going to be the polar opposite. Is playing in Buffalo one of, and I know they kind of just got on the scene in the last couple of years to returning to a heyday, but is it one of the more difficult and intimate places to play in the league?
Yeah, they sure do know how to try to get under your skin, say anything and everything. It really is a hostile environment, and their players truly feed off their energy. The crowd is amazing up there. It's a really cool environment to play at. It is honestly one of the best venues to play at, especially being an away team, because they're so passionate about winning there and just playing and seeing football at a high level. And it's fun to be in an environment like that. And what better way to be able to play when you know, on Monday night in front mm-hmm. of an even bigger audience as well. Like, it's going to be rocking. I'm excited to get up there and get going.
Mac Jones is going to be obviously on the road in his first huge hostile environment game. He probably had a few at Alabama, but I got to ask you this.
Is he our quarterback?
Yeah, no. Well, that's what I want to ask you. Is Mac a guy that we have showered with too much adoration, too many bouquets? We've spent too much time kneeling at the throne of Mac Jones. Are we guilty of that right now?
Man, you guys do whatever you want. He just got to keep being him. He's doing all right. What do you think?
Well, I think here's the interesting thing. The national media is now the ants on a popsicle stick with Mac Jones, and I think what we're having now is an overcorrection locally, where the media now says, okay, I've had enough Mac Jones for the last dozen games. Let's start to wheedle it back the other way. And Mac misses Hunter Henry, and that's his Achilles heel, and he's about to implode and never have another completion, and he's a product of the system. It's a very, very interesting media market we have, if you haven't already noticed. Very interesting.
I would never notice the media market here, right?
You are part of the media. Hey,
I've had guys come at me since I've been here. It's all right. It's fun. It's part of the whole process. It's part of being at the organization we're at. It's part of playing good football. It's part of being on a winning team. You got to accept criticism. You got to accept the passion of the fans. And I think you got to accept what the media people are saying. And obviously you don't sit there and like read everything and get, you know, being involved like that. But it's something that you want to be aware of, and you want to take it at stride and keep it moving. And the best way you can stop all the talking is just win. And that's the one thing that I love about this place, is if you win, everything's all good. And it might not be good enough for some people, but it's all good to the ones that matter.
You know what? I'm happy we're just off the side dishes. I'll be honest. I'm just happy we're off mac and cheese. How did the Van Noy Valor Foundation event go, my friend? Congratulations on another successful year with that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Rough numbers right now. We raised over $375,000. So amazing sponsorships from Optiline, Dan O'Brien and Zudi. Amazing. The executive board killed it. The state room, off the charts in Boston. Beautiful event. I'll tell you a quick story. I was able to throw passes out there to people that were paying for them. Real NFL footballs got to sign them. Threw it to one lady. She dropped it, and it hit some wine over some people. I felt really bad, but it was some good comedy.
See, I mean, you throw a hot ball. I mean, you do. I mean, I do.
I should have been a quarterback, bro.
Should have given
especially
out gloves.
That you see how much money they make. Woo.
Next year, you're giving out receiver gloves. That's the cure. All right, Kyle Van Noy, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Good luck next week against Buffalo.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Tom.